Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Business of Sport podcast on The Athletic. Coming up today, after apologies and U-turns from English clubs involved in the collapse of the Super League proposal, we'll look at Spain, where the reaction from its two biggest clubs has been one of defiance, especially from Florentino Perez, Real Madrid president, and one of the driving forces of the breakaway plans. We're joined today by Ramon Calderon, a Spanish lawyer and, of course, a former president of Real Madrid. This is the Business of Sport from The Athletic. So a slightly less dramatic week in England this week because all of the English clubs have dropped out of the Super League proposals, but it's a slightly different picture in Spain. The whole of this pod is looking at the European Super League from the Real Madrid perspective. I'm delighted to say that our guest is Ramon Calderon, who was president of Real from 2006 to 2009. And let's start, Ramon, with just an overview of how the club works.
Real Madrid is, in Spain, as in the rest of the world, is a legend. We've managed to get things that nobody has in this world that has so many fans around the world. It's a very special institution. As you know, we are not a company. We are a non-profit association with 93,000 members. That means that we don't have share capital. We don't have shareholders. We have to rely on our own resources. And that's very remarkable. And knowing that, we've got we've been proclaimed the best club of the 20th century, which is the same to say that it's the best club of the history of football. That's something important. We know that Real Madrid represents Madrid and Spain around the world quite well. We always say that it's the best ambassador, one of the best ambassadors that Spain has in the world. And that is very noticeable in anyone, in the media, in the politicians and for everyone. And that's important.
Given how you've just spoken about the structure of the club, Ramon, as president of Real Madrid, who are you responsible to? Who questions you? Who demands that you do things a certain way?
In theory, the members of the club. We have elections every 4 years that where the members can elect the president and the members of the board. And also there is a general assembly every year. But it's true that the president has a lot of power, mainly if the results are good ones. That's always what really matters in football. You have a president that has won 4 Champions League in the last years and 3 in a row. That gives him a lot of credit, and it's normal, it's logical that he's getting the credit of the members. And in this proposal, they've really thought that it's the best for Real Madrid. It's true that we are in a very, very difficult economic position due to our structure, as I told you before, and not being a company. So with involved in a very huge investment in our new stadium, and with the pandemic on top of that, really the situation is not easy. And maybe that's the reason why the president has been so desperate trying to get this project working. I think that's the reason.
Because of the structure, which you mentioned, and because of the financial situation that the club is in, where does Real Madrid get the majority of its income from?
The income? Well, we have a very perfect structure one third from TV rights, one third for marketing, and one third from ticketing and match day. That's why we've lost a lot of money this year, and the president has recognized that. That's a big trouble. The pandemic, nobody could foresee losses like that. And we don't have the opportunity, as other clubs, of increasing our capital. That's a big trouble. And that's why it's so important what we've got along the years, along the history. Everything has been difficult for us, economically speaking, but we've been able to play against the best, the biggest clubs and the multimillionaires and the states that own clubs, just competing with them and beating them. That's why I said it's a legend. It's a very special structure that is remarkable. It's been studied in many forums, economically speaking, and in football too, in sport too.
When you talk about you can't compete with the investment of other clubs, is that outside of the Spanish market? Are you looking at other European clubs there? Or even within Spain, are there clubs who can drive their investment more than Real Madrid because of Real Madrid's structure?
Not really. In Spain, we are really the ones with Barcelona, along with Barcelona, that have the biggest budget. But due to that, we managed to link the big brands, big sponsors. They know how important is this club. Just as an anecdote, in June 2003, when we introduced David Beckham to the press, we did it at 11 a.m. just to make the primetime news in Asia, where both are very popular. It had the world's second largest live TV audience after Princess Diana's funeral. And 1,000 journalists attended that presentation, that introduction. You know what it's a simple event, but that gives you an idea of what Real Madrid means. And that's why we are getting so much money through all those different issues.
Do you look at Bayern Munich enviously and their investment, or do you look at Liverpool enviously and their investment, or Paris Saint-Germain? Where do Real Madrid look at in Europe and think, God, I wish we could get the investment that they do?
I don't think we have any model. We think our model is the right one. We're really proud of it. But it's true that other clubs that are owned by investors, they can put money. They can increase capital, PSG. Well, Bayern Munich has some similar structures as we have. But let's say Liverpool, let's say Man United, Man City, well, all those clubs can increase their capital and can rely on different sources than Real Madrid. But I insist in that we are very proud of the way we are running this club along the history.
Ramon, it's Matt Slater here. What would you say to those critics from elsewhere who point out that Real Madrid has taken advantage of a very close relationship with the Spanish government over the years, has been very generously backed by regional banks, was able to sell some land at a fantastic price to the city of Madrid? I mean, I often hear when they hear people at Real Madrid make these points about state-backed clubs, they say, well, hold on a minute, aren't Real Madrid the original state-backed club in Europe?
It's not true that the banks are giving us away money. It's not true that the government is helping us, but it's true that they are seeing us as the best ambassadors, or as I said before, one of the best ambassadors of this country around the world. But that doesn't mean that they are giving us anything for free.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, look, people have repeatedly made this accusation around the training grounds, and they have repeatedly pointed out that both you and Barca have had cozy loans. They've had generous loans from regional banks, and that is no longer possible just because those banks themselves are under pressure. That's fine. All right. I've heard your answer. This point about Real Madrid being an ambassador for Spain, which makes complete sense. Do you still feel that now? Because we have this situation where Real Madrid seem to be openly at war with La Liga. They seem to be saying we have outgrown La Liga. Is this Is Real Madrid an ambassador for Real Madrid, or is it an ambassador for Spain at the moment?
I think for Spain and for Madrid too. We don't know really about this project. Even the promoters don't really believe in it either. We don't know any detail. We don't know if it was just a project of a new Champions League, but at the same time playing the domestic competitions. We don't know anything. It's true that in some way, but I think, I don't know in how much our reputation or prestige can be harmed by this idea. Let's see what happens in the next weeks or months. But our prestige is very strong. I don't think that this is going to be too serious to harm our reputation. I hope so.
But serious business-wise, because Florentino Perez would have us believe that without the money from a European Super League, Real Madrid are in trouble. So the future business-wise, does that concern you?
The point, as I said, is nobody could foresee a pandemic that has reduced our income in more than 200 million euros. So that's on top of that is the investment in the new stadium. That is perhaps wasn't the best thing to do in any case, but you add that to the pandemic. So the situation is difficult, and the president has said that we have to look for solutions. I don't know what he has in his mind, but it's true that with the Super League, he could have overcome this problem in a different way.
What would you do?
Well, I don't know, really. I hadn't been involved in the stadium refurbishment. I've told that many times. I managed to get the final of the Champions League in Madrid, in the Bernabeu Stadium in 2010, because UEFA thought it was one of the best stadiums in Europe. So I don't think that in 10 years we have to do that investment. We don't know how much it's going to be, but for sure a huge amount of money, because it must be, I've seen the project, it's incredible, it's admirable, it's something completely out of this world in some way, but that costs money. That costs money, and that's a problem. I hadn't done that, and then we could have overcome this pandemic in a different way.
How would you describe the relationship between Real Madrid, between Florentino Perez, if you like, and Javier Tebas? Would it not be fair to say that some of this tension, some of this desire to look elsewhere, to look beyond Spain, has come about because Javier Tebas has come in and said, look, the Premier League is the successful global product around the world. We must close the gap. It's successful because it has this perception, it might not be true, but it's a perception that it's competitive from top to bottom. They share their TV money more evenly. We're going to do that here in La Liga too. That's the first thing. So that immediately upset Real and Barca, who were taking huge multiples of the TV revenue compared to the other clubs. So had massive inbuilt advantages in Spain. That's the first thing he did. And then he started to address quite aggressively financial fair play. He started to give clubs bespoke budget. Was it not those two things together that really instigated Florentino's desire to look beyond La Liga?
Maybe, but we changed the system. Now the TV rights are sold collectively. So this much more fair, fairer than it was before. That's the first thing. And I think we are quite glad being competing in La Liga, and I think our fans too. It's very important to be able to play against our neighbors, the rivals, not only Barcelona, but also Seville and Valencia. It would have been a big mistake to say we want to be out of Spain. And I don't think that's the idea of the president. I don't know. I haven't talked to him about this. But I think what I've read, the idea is to be in that Super League and on top of that, to play the domestic competitions. But it's true that the relationship with Tebas is not the best one. I think it's a personal problem. It's not really a problem between the two institutions. And sometimes that happens and you cannot do anything. I hope they can get along well. It's true also that Tebas is not having a good relationship with the president of the federation, with Rubiales. Sometimes you don't know if it is a problem, who is the one to blame for that, but it's true. But we are inside La Liga. We are trying to help La Liga to be even better and stronger. I don't think we are not the ones to blame for any problem in La Liga.
I was just speaking to some friends in Spain, some colleagues in Spain last week about the reaction to the Super League story and saying, well, look, you know, here in the UK, it's been pretty universal against the idea. Media, fans, sponsors, you name it, broadcasters have all sort of said no. In Spain, I was slightly surprised to hear, and I wondered if it's because of the power of Real Madrid and Barca's brand and the power they exert over the media. It was, well, it was, to be honest with you, what are UEFA doing? What are the Premier League clubs doing? They are killing the Super League idea. And they were even blaming Qatar for it as well. So I'm just intrigued by, do you feel that's because Real Madrid have that much power over the media, or they deserve to have that much power? People trust implicitly what Florentino Perez thinks as being for the best?
I think media is true. They haven't been critics about what has happened here with that project. But also the fans. The fans rely on this president because he's got a lot, many titles in the time he's been at the helm. And that's important for fans. And we have to say, Spaniards, we are very conformist in some cases. And perhaps we don't have the values of sport. One of the main values of sport, which is meritocracy, to the system that rewards achievement, is very well rooted in English fans, but not as much maybe in our fans. And Real Madrid has seen that we've got five Champions League in the last 10, 12 years, and we still are on the way to get the 14th Champions League. I hope so. and that's important. And we've managed to bring the best players of the world, and that's important for fans. So they believe, really, that this project could be good for Real Madrid. I don't know if it is good for football. I don't think so. I've told already that. I think it's a project that will kill football because you are going to have a closed club. And with those clubs, nobody knows who has decided which are the best ones and why they are there. Tottenham, with all the respect to that very, very important club, but they haven't got anything in 60 years. What about Ajax? What about Benfica? What about Rome? I think, what about PSG? It's so weird that the last runner-ups of the Champions League are not included in that competition. So everything is strange. I think, as I said before, even the promoters didn't believe in the project. If not, it is a bit grotesque, the way it was released to the media, yes, at night, going to defend it to a late night show in Spain called El Chiringuito, a bar beach. I don't have anything against that program, but you can imagine that perhaps this project should have been presented in an open event publicly, with the media attending it, with the promoters explaining what they wanted to do, how and why, and with the TV channels just present there, and the financial, everything. They didn't do that. They said, yes, we are going to create a club, a new Super League. And that's not enough for something that, according to them, it was going to be historic project that was going to stir up the world of football. I don't think that's really what it was about, and that's why perhaps it was killed in 48 hours, even the way it wasn't really mature. That, and it's also strange that they said they had been working on it for 3 years. I'm happy that finally it's not going on, and I think it's good for football.
But the Champions League reforms were put through and have these two historic VIP places if somebody doesn't qualify. So if Real Madrid were to finish sixth in La Liga, do you think it's right that they would still get a Champions League place on their historic performances?
We'll never be sixth in La Liga.
Well, there you go.
So that's not the case. We are going to be always our winners, or second, or third, but always in our history, we've been there. We are not afraid of that.
Do you agree with that principle, though? Because that, again, goes against the meritocracy of sport.
I agree with you. I think it's very important in sport that you get what you deserve, not that you are taking for granted that you are going to have something if you don't deserve it. It hasn't been our case, but I agree with you that if you were sixth, which it never has happened in our history, we will have to accept not to be in the Champions League.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
When you were president of Real Madrid, did anybody ever say no to you?
Yeah, many times. My time wasn't easy.
Because at the moment, Ramon, it appears that people don't say no within either the club, the media, or the Spanish political society, that people don't say no to Florentino Perez.
It's clear that he controls many aspects of the society, mainly, and that's important to be pointed out, because of what he's got, what the club has got. If he hadn't been winning Champions League, for sure, things will be different. Fans really want to get titles. That's why we've built a legend, because our people, our fans, are very demanding.
Do fans actually equate winning a Champions League with Florentino Perez? Because I'm not sure, going back to the difference in cultures, I'm not sure if Manchester United win the Europa League, as they did 2 or 3 years ago, that the fans will give any credit to the Glazers.
But it's completely different. This is the club that belongs to the members. The link between the clubs and the club and the fans is the success. It's to win for Real Madrid is not a success, it's an obligation. And it's very much interesting to know that 75% of the people who live in Madrid, including myself, weren't being born in Madrid. So the link we have with the club is the success, the excellence. We know that things are done well, and that has been our idea always. And then the fans have very, very demanding to the club and to the president and to the members of the board and to the coach and to everyone. Take into account that in the last 47 years, only one coach, Del Bosque, has been more than 3 years on that bench. That gives you an idea of how demanding is this club. And when we get success, everyone is happy. If not, well, you have to be Bernabeu Stadium when things are not going well. The reaction is very, very hard. It's not the same in other clubs.
Ramon, I mean, it's really interesting that you keep talking about the socios, the fans, that kind of unique structure, if you like, or different, sort of unique in terms of what we have in the UK, structure that Real Madrid has. But we started this conversation with you talking about this idea that Real Madrid's structure makes it harder in certain ways as well. You don't have a sovereign wealth fund behind you. You don't have one very, very wealthy guy like Chelsea do. Is there ever a conversation to be had about changing the structure? Can you imagine a president of Real Madrid saying, guys, it's been great, but we're going to have to do something different. We're going to float on the stock exchange. We're going to sell 25% of the club to a private equity firm. Is there a different way for Real to go?
I hope not. I think it's an idea that is in the mind of the president for a long time. But we need half of the members plus one. Let's say 45,000 members saying yes. Well, you can convince them saying that this is the only way to be in this world like it is. But I hope not. I think our model is unique. We've done it for more than 100 years of history. We've managed to build a model which is very, very interesting. We tried to bring the best players of the world, and we started with Figo, Zidane, Ronaldo, Beckham. All those players together brought a lot of money through sponsorships, through media, through brands that wanted to be linked to this club. So that's why we've managed to get the biggest budget of the football world, which is amazing, but we did it in the right way. So our structure was perfect up to now. It's true that the pandemic is something has hit us very hard, but on top of that is the stadium. So the situation is difficult, and I cannot foresee what's going to happen.
How did the Premier League get so far ahead of La Liga as a financial collective then? Was it down to allowing different ownership structures, or is it simply down to broadcast deals, or both?
Both. I think you've done things quite well. The way you've been programming the matches, the TV rights are, I think, triple now than the ones in La Liga. The Premier League has been run in a very, very good way, and everyone is trying to imitate what you've done. And in fact, in Spain, only 5-6 years ago, all the matches were played at the same time. And also at Christmas time, you have many matches, so kids can go to the matches because they don't have school. We don't have that system here. We have holidays for 15 or 20 days without matches. It's precisely when kids and young people can attend and go into the stadium. So many different aspects that maybe have done the Premier League the best in the world.
But here's the interesting thing. In the wake of the European Super League, the big debate in the UK now is on ownership of clubs and whether clubs should adopt the German ownership model, the 50-plus-1 rule. Now, if ownership of clubs went that way in England in particular, would that actually help Spanish clubs? Would it help the rest of Europe?
I don't know. I think Bayern Munich are doing things in a perfect way. And I know quite well Rummenigge, Beckenbauer, they are the smartest and brilliant people in this sport. And they've done things in a very good way. I think the answer from Rummenigge to Perez, when he said that we need to increase the income, and he said no, maybe it's a good thing to do, but what we have to do is to cut costs. We cannot go on spending and spending money without getting the right income for that. Many clubs in England, a lot of them have 80% of their salaries, of the revenue is going to salaries. That's a model that is impossible. You cannot do that because you are going to go bankrupt. If not, you are going to have to increase capital many times during the year. So that's why I think Bayern Munich with that system, Barcelona, Real Madrid, I don't know if you can change the Premier. I don't think so. It's very difficult.
On cutting costs and stuff, as a Real Madrid fan and how much you love the club, if Real Madrid tried to bring in Kylian Mbappe or Haaland this summer, would you put your head in your hands and we cannot afford this?
The president has already said that. If the Super League is not on, is not a reality, we cannot bring Haaland or Mbappe. He's already said that. And I agree with him that it's going to be difficult. I would be more than happy to see them on the ground of Bernabeu Stadium. But it's true that it would be difficult, very difficult.
I'd like to ask you a question with your lawyer's hat on. I don't know if you've seen the Super League contracts, but you've possibly read about them. And I think there's a sort of key aspect to them, there's a key part in the documents. And I think we're going to be talking about this for the next few weeks. We're going to be talking and reading about this for the next few weeks, in that Florentino Perez has talked about them being binding and that the project isn't dead. These English clubs can't leave because they've signed up to the project. Now, I've looked at the documents, and there are certain provisos and caveats which lawyers like you can argue about. You know, were certain conditions met? But I think there's a key date in there, July 10th. 70% of the founding members had to have committed to the project by July 10th. Now, you could argue that they had 80% a week or so ago. And that's clearly Florentino Perez's point, that we had 12 of our 15, 80%, signed up by whatever it was, April 20-something. I think if you read the document, I think lawyers will say, well, hold on a minute, but that hadn't been agreed. We didn't have regulatory approval from FIFA. We didn't have a broadcast deal. We didn't have certain other things. it might be difficult because you might end up working for one of these in one of these cases. Do you foresee this legal row between the Super League clubs becoming a big issue, or do you think it will be quietly dropped?
I think it's really finished. It's my opinion. I'm sure that Perez is defending it as he's doing it, because we need desperately that money. It's something that he has said publicly. And then, but it's clear that everyone has stepped down, even the bank. He said, I think he's living in another world. He's saying that the project is on. Then it's like the naked emperor that he naked, but everyone close to him is not saying you are naked. No one is here. And also the bank. I don't think many times a bank at JP Morgan has publicly said that he apologizes, that he made a mistake founding this project. So even if the club say, let's go on, that they haven't, you don't have the money. And who is the TV operator? They didn't say that. The loan from the bank had the guarantee or some TV rights that no one has explained where coming from. So for good of football, I think is the project is finished. I don't know the details. I don't have a personal knowledge of the details, so I cannot tell you how binding it is for these clubs. But I know many of the wise people around this project, and I'm sure they didn't do that without a parachute. They didn't jump into the void without knowing that there were no really responsibilities for that. Maybe the costs of just introducing the company or the expenses of the lawyers or finance, but no more than that. It's my opinion, but I cannot assure anything about that.
Ramon, I just wonder if I might just change the subject slightly. I just ask you what you're up to now. I mean, you've got this wealth of football knowledge. We know about your legal career. I understand you've been giving some advice to Eric Alonso about Derby County. You know, what else have you got going on? And what can you say about that Derby situation?
Well, I'm working in my office as I've been done for the last 40 something years. And in that case, someone asked me to advise legally. I've been only in the legal part of that with the Derby's lawyers. Give my opinion. I try to do what I know in this world, but nothing more, nothing in sport, just legally to give my advice, the advice of my office to the new owners. And that's it. I finished my work once they've signed the contracts, and that's it. I think the Derby's lawyers have done a good work in this case, and that's been my part. But legally.
Is buying a football club legally complicated?
Well, it is, but it's not if you have money enough to do it.
Does Eric Alonso and his family have enough money?
I can't tell you. I don't know. But if you have money enough and the seller is willing to sell, I think that was the case. Apparently, I haven't talked to the owner. I've talked to the lawyers. They've sent me the contracts and everything. Our office has advised the buyers, and that's it. I don't know what's happening now. I think they are trying to get the permission from the EFL, but I have finished my work, as I said.
At the start of this, you described how hectic it had been the last couple of weeks. I think a lot of people have found the last couple of weeks quite depressing on the one hand because of the financial power, I suppose, of some people in football. And then other people have found it a little bit affirming that in the England, at least, fan power took over. Given your career in football, given your connections, given your legal background, financial background, is football at the top level in trouble? Is it broken?
I hope not. I think UEFA has decided to change the rules of the competition of the Champions League. I think it's fair, as far as I've known. More clubs, 36, more matches in the stage group, 10 instead of 6. That will give more opportunities to other clubs and also more money to the competition. When I was member of the vice president as one of the committees trying to change the money that we received, we did it, but we did it inside the UEFA. I think we did it in the right way, not making a fuss, not trying to pervert or subvert the football world. And in that case, we managed to get, I think, 80% of the money coming for this competition to the clubs. I think was fair. Maybe we can get more now. I don't know, but it's normal. It's logic that the clubs want to get more money if they deserve it, if they generate that money. But in my view, I think UEFA is willing to accept it and to dialogue and trying to get a solution for everyone. I think that would be the best for football. And I would be glad if they managed to get it.
All about money though, isn't it, Ramon?
Well, it's life. Football is a business since TV rights started to pay in a lot of money, and knowing that was very interesting to have this this sport inside their platforms. So it has become part of the show business. In some way, you see that it's a big platform of 22 players playing in a big stage, and the fans are just there because they have to be. But in some cases, you feel that it's true that TV are just having a lot to say in this business. And it's true that with that money, now players are getting perhaps, I don't know. I'm always with the players. I think they have a short career. They deserve the money they generate. As I don't think they are the ones to blame for this. Any one of us would do the same. We can get double, we can earn double that we are earning. Why not? And as I told always them, you are going to live until 90 or 100 years, being 30 now, so you need to get as much money as you can. I think they are right in that, trying to get as much money as they can. Why not? They are paying their 100, why are they going to accept 50?
Ramon, thank you very much for joining us. It's been fascinating the last 40 minutes or so. Really appreciate you giving us your time this morning. Thank you.
My pleasure. I know I follow you. I follow your platform, your digital newspaper. I think you are doing a fantastic job. Yeah, for sure. You always just hit the bullseye.
Oh. Ramon.
When we do the business of darts, we'll get you back on, Ramon. We'll get you back on.
Thank you very much. Real Madrid are so good commercially.
That was fantastic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, that was fascinating, Matt. I think the thing that stood out for me is just a reminder that different cultures react in different ways to different stories. And you know, Ramon Calderon there kept reminding us of the conformist nature of Spanish football society. So I have to take his word on that. And then maybe you can see why the outcry hasn't been as big amongst Real Madrid fans as it has over here.
I completely agree. You know, we all tend to sort of see things through the prism of our own experiences, don't we? We tend to take a very sort of Anglo-centric view of things. And it was just great to hear, one, someone who's had the most remarkable career in football. I think he's, you know, continues to do so. He's very modest. I think he's closer to things than he let on there. Fantastic English. But just, you know, getting that insight, I think, into Spain and what it's like to be a Real Madrid fan. I mean, I picked out a few things. I just scribbled a few things down as he was talking. you know, one, it's dead. You know, for him, the Super League is dead. He called it grotesque. So that was an unequivocal, it didn't work. The market didn't like it. But a total unequivocal commitment to Real Madrid's model. You know, this has been discussed for years, you know, is that's what's holding Real back. I mean, it seems ridiculous we're talking about Real Madrid being held back. But, you know, can it survive this wonderfully romantic idea, this membership system? Can it survive? And it, you know, absolutely it can survive. I loved his answer where we sort of suggested that they might ever need a coefficient place in. I love that. We'll never not be in the top six. And I think that just sums them up.
I mean, that's both factually correct and also quite a lawyer's answer, I thought.
Yeah.
That.
Right. Well, I mean, we know that those coefficients were basically invented with the big six in mind. You know, with England, what we have here, and this is part of the Premier League's, how it's been able to sort of sell itself around the world, does have this sort of 6-4 issue, which is exciting. That word again, jeopardy. And look, and let's be honest, because as he pointed out, what are Spurs doing there? Are Spurs really better than Ajax? It's not really six, is it? Because, you know, Leicester, West Ham, Everton, you know, we have this sort of queue of clubs that are desperate to get in there. So that's what I like that. We're not going to need those coefficient places. And that sort of, you know, we are Spain's ambassador. We are supposed to win. That's what we do. And I think that's really interesting. So I like that. But there was a nice, I mean, he was very sort of polite about Real in general. But there was one little criticism. I don't know if you picked it up. Something that he wouldn't have done.
The stadium. Yes. The stadium. Yeah.
Because it was fine 10 years ago. It was fine for the Super League, for the Champions League final.
The final thing that stood out for me was the support for not only Bayern's model, but Rummenigge's quotes on, no, we don't need more money. We need to cut costs.
Yes.
And I wonder, I always think there are two things with that. One, that is understandably what needs to happen probably across elite football. But at the same time, then that's down to us fans to not kick off when Jadon Sancho isn't signed or Haaland isn't signed or Mbappe isn't signed, because the money just isn't there. It has to be there as a collective, because when we talk about cutting costs, it's you can't spend £100 million on a player or whatever it is on wages. It's not cutting five people out of the ticket office.
Oh, too right.
And that I think is a sort of big moral problem, I suppose, for football over this summer.
And look, cost control was at the heart of the Super League idea. It was there, sort of a kind of, they were talking loosely about sort of 55%, something that they would kind of live with, you know, which is tighter than, well, is it tighter? I mean, it depends how you look at it, but it's certainly probably tighter than UEFA's financial fair play system. And look, they've given clues. They have talked, there have been clues along the way. Agnelli talks about maybe the big club shouldn't be able to buy each other's players. You know, that idea that PSG could raid Barca, you know, and you get this sort of explosion of transfer fees for Neymar. And you know, it's there. They know they need to be protected from themselves. But, you know, he's a lawyer. He'd also know that he's then got to go defend that case against the inevitable FIFA Pro challenge. And we get back to square one.
Seems an appropriate place to leave it. Good stuff, Matt. Thank you. Don't forget you can subscribe to The Athletic. It's available at a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. So that's 40% off the full price of a subscription. TheAthletic.com/Ornstein and Chapman to take advantage of it. A 40% discount, £3.99 a month for 6 months. TheAthletic.com/Ornstein and Chapman. Thanks, Matt. We're back next week. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.